From the main public broadcasting network, I'm Tom Porter.
I'm Josie Huang, and for Tuesday, July 27th, this is Maine Things Considered. Some lawmakers call into question how long the state's current public employees' retirement system can be sustained under the existing financial circumstances.
Republican gubernatorial candidate Paul LePage apologizes to Democratic opponent Libby Mitchell for joking about her age.
And the city of Portland votes tonight on whether to approve a mosque run by Afghan Muslims. Controversy around the mosque has led to a lawsuit and changes in city zoning laws.
Those stories and more are coming up on Main Things Considered. But first, news headlines from NPR.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Ann Taylor. Senate Democrats...
to position themselves for the moment.
We're having a few technical problems with Main Things Considered tonight, but we will give you what we have, a slightly curtailed version of the show. And I'm Tom Porter. With me is Josie Wong. The first story we have tonight is that the Maine Civil Liberties Union has joined its counterparts in 29 other states today in asking the Federal Bureau of Investigation to turn over records related to the agency's collection of racial and ethnic data in local communities. The MCLU issued the Freedom of Information Access request, or FOIA as it's known, to solicit information from the FBI regarding the collection of information under new powers granted to agents in the final months of the Bush administration to help them in their fight against terrorism and organized crime. MCLU Executive Director Shanna Bellows says these guidelines, known as the FBI's Domestic Intelligence and Operations Guide, were made public earlier this year, and she's concerned they give the Bureau's agents the power to map ethnic-oriented businesses, behaviors, and cultural traditions in Maine and elsewhere. She came into our studios earlier today.
This came about at the very end of the Bush administration. As the Bush administration was departing, the FBI issued the Domestic Intelligence and Operations Guide update. That guide allowed agents to, and I quote, identify locations of concentrated ethnic communities in the field office's domain, and then to go further to collect and analyze racial and ethnic community demographics, including information about ethnic-oriented businesses or other facilities, behaviors, cultural traditions, and lifestyle characteristics. It is appropriate to collect racial and ethnic information to prevent discrimination, but it is not appropriate to collect racial and ethnic information to then engage in specific targeting that is race-based.
Well, I spoke to an FBI spokesman, and they're talking about building up what they call domain awareness, connecting the dots to stop another 9/11 happening, and that involves having a complete picture of the community that they're supposed to be trying to protect, knowing exactly what's going on. So wouldn't that include knowing the information that you were referring to about various communities and so forth?
If that complete picture encompasses both white Mainers and Mainers of color, both native-born Mainers and Mainers who've moved here from other countries, then that might be appropriate. But to select certain groups for targeting and mapping based solely on their race and ethnicity is unfair, ineffective, and inconsistent with our values.
But the process that you're criticizing, could it not also be used to protect the sections of society that you're trying to protect? And I think the FBI actually points out that the information it's collecting on these communities could be helpful in preventing them from being victims of civil rights crimes.
We are very interested in the results of this FOIA to find out how many communities in Maine have been mapped and targeted, which communities in Maine have been mapped, and we would like to see those maps. Again, it may be appropriate to collect racial and ethnic information to prevent discrimination. But our concern is that over the last decade, certain communities have been targeted for increased scrutiny and surveillance. It is not appropriate to place people under surveillance because of their race and ethnicity alone.
That constitutes racial profiling.
That does constitute racial profiling. And racial profiling occurs when law enforcement targets people based solely on their perceived race, ethnicity, nationality, or religion. Racial profiling violates the U.S. Constitution. It contradicts the promise of equal protection under the law. And ultimately, racial profiling is counterproductive because it undermines community support for legitimate law enforcement efforts. When community members feel targeted by law enforcement, they're less likely to come forward to report real crimes or real terrorist threats. And the MCLU has been engaged for months now in conversations with communities of color and immigrant communities in Portland and around the state about perceptions of racial profiling, perceptions that they are targeted because of their race, not protected because of their race.
Do you think, you know, the FBI, it is a very difficult position they're in to try and protect us and at the same time not trample on our rights? I mean, look, for example, I know there's been stories about them investigating the Somali community in Maine a little bit. I think much more so in Minneapolis. They're concerned about links with terrorist groups in Africa. Now, how do you go about doing that without annoying the ACLU?
Law enforcement programs based on evidence and suspicion of real criminal or terrorist activity are more effective than programs of mass suspicion. Trying to collect information, all the information that you can about entire communities, falls in line with that concept of total information awareness.
Well, they would call it connecting the dots, building up an intelligence analysis.
Again, specificity of information. When you have specific information about specific criminal or terrorist activity, that is the most effective way to track down and then prosecute people who would do us real harm. The FBI and other law enforcement agencies have limited resources. FBI agents should be spending their time investigating actual criminal activity rather than wasting their time creating these enormous maps based on local racial and ethnic demographics.
Now, the DIOG, the guidelines that you're critical of, you said they came out at the end of the Bush administration, and then there was some pressure, wasn't there, that caused them to be released
absolutely
publicly this year, was it?
Yes. So the DIOG was not actually made publicly available until September of 2009. A group of Muslim advocates then filed a Freedom of Information Act request to get an unredacted version, and a fuller version was released in January of 2010. The ACLU is interested in how local FBI offices are implementing these policies. That's why Maine and 29 other states, including DC, are asking for information about which communities have been targeted, how many communities have been targeted, and what do these maps look like.
MCLU Executive Director Shanna Bellows talking earlier. And the FBI did decline to provide recorded comment for this story, but spokesman Bill Carter told me earlier that the guidelines the MCLU is referring to are an essential part of what he calls the Bureau's domain program, which incorporates the lessons of 9/11. The 2001 attacks, he says, underlined the need for better intelligence, better analysis, and a better dissemination of intelligence. To achieve this, he says, it's crucial to understand every inch of a given community.
Tonight, city officials in Portland will vote on whether to approve an application by Afghan Muslims to run a mosque out of a former TV repair shop. The vote could end about a year of controversy. The city initially rejected the proposal, citing zoning conflicts, which then spurred a lawsuit by the Maine Civil Liberties Union on behalf of the mosque. The city, in the meantime, relaxed its zoning laws to accommodate smaller worship groups, such as the mosque.
We will be happy to hear the result, and we are optimistic that it will be positive.
Saif Amini is the president of the Portland Masjid and Islamic Center, which the city has allowed to operate pending its application. Under the old rules, the mosque had to be located on at least an acre and have 40 parking spots. Now the city will use a case-by-case basis, and the mosque will only be required to have 10 spaces for a lot that's less than half an acre.
some people, most of them make carpool again, and they park away or they walk.
Amini says these changes will allow the 30 Afghan families, plus other worshippers from India, Pakistan, and Somalia, to have a community space.
On the Friday, we go for a prayer. It will be around 20 to 30 people. And on weekend, which children come over, one of the members teach them Quran and religion education and culture.
The MCLU, which sued the city, saying that federal laws protecting religious freedoms were being violated, says it will drop its suit if the planning board approves the application as anticipated. But Zach Hayden, staff attorney for the MCLU, says there must be continuing efforts to ensure that religious groups have places to gather in the city.
So we're going to remain vigilant in watching how these laws get implemented. And if we happen to talk to a group that's having a hard time meeting even these new standards, we would certainly enter into conversations with the city about that.
Joining the MCLU in its efforts will be the Maine Council of Churches. Eric Smith, the group's associate director, says his concern is that newer religious groups have to meet zoning rules that weren't required of churches built centuries, even decades ago.
There are old, beautiful, gorgeous churches that take up almost every square inch of their lot with the building themselves and provide almost no parking. And the city has had to deal with that. But we shouldn't allow the changes in our transportation structure to dictate how it is that these newer religious groups can gather, because that results in really unfair favoritism to folks that were here first and managed to get in before those rules were made.
The city maintains that the last thing it was trying to do was discriminate against any religious group.
Like, from the city's perspective, this was a straight-up zoning issue, though. That's what it came down to.
Nicole Clegg is spokeswoman for the city of Portland.
And certainly the last thing the city would want are for people, whether they're of faith that hasn't been, you know, that's newly emerging in the city of Portland, we would want them all to feel welcome and understand that, like, they're valued resident in the city of Portland.
Clegg says that the city had been working toward a resolution with the mosque when the MCLU surprised officials with a lawsuit. The MCLU says that it initiated a lawsuit because the city had been unresponsive to the mosque. But both sides can agree that zoning ordinances for places of worship cannot be one size fits all.
What the issue around the mosque at 978 Washington Avenue brought forward was that, you know, we did need to take into consideration size when it came to our zoning ordinances for these places of assembly.
The planning board votes on the issue tonight at City Hall at 7.
A day after the Maine Democratic Party asked Republican gubernatorial candidate Paul LePage for an apology, the Waterville mayor has offered one, but not for what Democrats had asked. As Susan Sharon reports, LePage is telling his opponent, Elizabeth Mitchell, he's sorry for making a joke about her age and threatening to stop granting interviews with the media unless they're in writing.
Stop in Bath, LePage also took aim at Mitchell's age, pointing out she was LePage, who is 61 years old, also criticized the media, and MPBN in particular, for exploiting his comments. LePage told WBOM's morning show hosts that he'll be taking a different tact with the press from here on out.
Well, from now on, what I'm going to do is I'm not going to make any comments to reporters unless it's in writing.
Really? Huh.
Yeah. Because they won't report what you say. They just report the spin that they want to put on it.
LePage did not apologize for comments about Democratic organizer Arden Manning. Dan Walker, an attorney for the Maine Democratic Party, says Manning has asked him to look into the possibility of a slander lawsuit. To be successful, Manning would have to demonstrate that LePage's comments were false or were made with a reckless disregard for the truth. But because Manning is a public figure, there would have to be an even higher threshold to meet.
He would also have to prove that the statement harmed his reputation in such a manner that it resulted in economic harm. So the Democratic Party is assessing both of these issues, and they do know that the statement is not true, so they're assessing whether or not he made a mistake or he made it with reckless disregard for the truth.
Attempts to reach Paul LePage through his campaign were unsuccessful. A receptionist who answered the phone said the candidate was unavailable to take any questions. For MPBN News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And just a quick note, we apologize for not being able to bring you A.J. Higgins' report on the problems facing the state retirement system because of technical difficulties. We'll have this report for you, though, on our website, mpbn.net, as soon as we can. And it's approaching 3 minutes now before 6. Time to check the weather forecast with meteorologist Paul Cousins.
Tonight, once again, will be clear for the most part, dry and comfortable. Temperatures will settle into the 50s to near 60 along the coast south of Portland. Summer warmth returns briefly tomorrow with a noticeable spike in humidity. If that's your preference, make the most of it. It is not likely to reoccur for some time to come. Showers and thunderstorms will press into northwestern border towns by dusk and overspread the entire state tomorrow night. Highs during the day tomorrow will range from the upper 70s along the northern border to the upper 80s Portland south. It will be cooler along the coast east of Casco Bay. The ensuing cold front Thursday will eventually change the game markedly. Over northern Maine, skies will be partly cloudy and it will be much drier. Over western and central Maine, clouds will break in the morning, the afternoon considerably more comfortable. While over southern and down east Maine, showers and thunderstorms will linger through midday with clouds breaking in the afternoon. However, the air will remain thick until evening. Temperatures will be quite similar throughout the state, 80 to 85, 70s along the coast east of Rockland. Friday will feature much drier weather statewide and decidedly cooler. Clouds will compete with sunshine over northern Maine, and there is the low risk of showers north of Presque Isle. Throughout western, central, and down east towns, expect a mix of sun and clouds with nearly full sun south of Lewiston, Auburn. Temperatures low 70s north, upper 70s south. Saturday holds a promise for more fine summer weather, showers a possibility Sunday. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
That's Maine Things Considered for this Tuesday. We had production help from Keith Shortall and Rich Tozier. I'm Tom Porter.
And I'm Josie Huang. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
Things Considered just ahead, we also invite you to watch The Journal and BBC World News on MPBN television, available each weeknight at 5:30 and 6 o'clock, respectively. These are the listener-supported radio stations of the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. WMEA Portland 90.1, WMEH Bangor 90.9, WMEW Waterville 91.3, WMEB Calais 89.7, WMEM Presque Isle 106.1, WMEF Fort Kent 106.5, WMEP Camden 90.5, and on the web at npbn.net. The Maine Public Broadcasting Network was founded by the University of Maine System and Colby